Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Tuesday, October 11th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. I wish you could see what goes on behind the scenes before the show starts. It's hilarious.
Sometimes he almost doesn't live to be on the show.
All right, to start off, Lisa has a big thank you to extend to somebody.
Yes, Loretta Medaglia. We love you, and we love the new pins that you had ordered for us. Check these out, people. These are awesome. I don't know if you can't see what it says, but it says World Independent News Group, Truth Matters, and the Wing TV website.
Right.
Thank you very much, Loretta.
And what we're going to do is we're going to put one of these pens in with every order that we get here at Wing TV. So if you order a book, a chat book, one of the videotapes, whatever, any kind of order whatsoever, we're going to throw in
right.
a free Wing
Loretta,
TV pen.
Loretta paid for 1,000 of these pens mm-hmm. to be made, so we really appreciate this. This is another way we can get the word out and get people checking out what we're doing and turn them on to the truth.
That's right.
Thank you, Loretta.
Also, we want to say that the easiest way to watch this show, we're discovering now from people out there, is to simply hit the download button. We're still getting bogged down in the primetime viewing area, and people say that if they just hit the download button, go away or go surfing on the net or whatever and come back in a little bit, then they watch the show completely without stops or anything like that. And we're going to keep looking into this, maybe even just make Wing TV a downloadable show only. We don't know yet. But try it tonight. Just hit download and then go do something else and come back. And they say you can watch the show straight through with none of the stops or pauses or freeze-ups or timeouts or anything like that.
This doesn't apply to the download people. Obviously, it takes a bit longer to download the show than a cable or DSL connection. But you can still download it with the dial-up.
Right. Exactly. Now, as we said yesterday on the show, what we're going to talk about today is Mr. John Lennon. Last Sunday would have been his 65th birthday.
Right.
And some people out there love John Lennon. Quite honestly, some people hate John Lennon. And they say, oh, he's nothing but a hippie, a drug addict, a communist. And you know, the good thing about John Lennon is whether you loved him or hated him, he readily admitted his mistakes and his faults. Anyone that's read any of his interviews knows that he was very open about not only what he considered good about himself, but also what he considered bad. So if they would say these criticisms to him, he would say, yeah, you might be right about it. And some people even say, well, John Lennon was working for the other side. Well, I tend not to believe that. But hey, people are allowed to have their own views. But we're going to talk today about John Lennon as an activist, someone that created controversy. And last night, Lisa and I were talking about where we were and what we were doing when we heard that John Lennon had been shot. Go ahead.
I was only 13 or 14 years old, and I was at home when I heard about it. And I know that it wrecked my life for maybe the next year or so, me and my friends. And we ended up camping out in front of the Dakota, and it was just a year full of crying after that, crying and singing John Lennon and Beatles songs. And I think one of the things that made him so fascinating was that he was an extremist, not only in his music, but in his life. It made him a fascinating person.
Yeah, and I remember where I was. It was the winter of 1980. I was living up in Erie, Pennsylvania, right on Lake Erie at the time. And I was with a good buddy, we call him the Duke, and we're in his Camaro. We went to visit some friends at a little college called Mercyhurst College. Well, they weren't home, so we went out in the parking lot, sat in his car, and we're listening to the radio. Back in our wild days, we were smoking a joint, and the news came on, John Lennon shot. And we still talk about this, me and the Duke, where we were that time, and it's going to be 25 years this winter.
Can you believe that?
It's unbelievable, but I still remember it as if it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And you know, anybody that's killed in that kind of way has to be a threat or a danger to the power structure. And even though we're not going to talk about the conspiracy of his murder, something was going on there where some people in very high places wanted him taken out.
Well, it was never any secret that he was under surveillance by the FBI. The FBI conducted surveillance among a lot of celebrities, including Marilyn Monroe and Liberace, who they said had a gambling problem, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that was no secret, and he had a long battle with the government and immigration department.
Right.
And they were denying him a permanent visa, which he longed for, and finally won.
Yeah. So what we're going to do, like I said, is talk about his activism. But, and this is something that me and Lisa got into last night, and I was talking to a radio show host today before the show, and the song Imagine keeps coming up. And I'd say this is my least favorite of all John Lennon songs. The person on the radio said it's the most evil song ever written, because if you listen to the lyrics, he talks about imagine there's no heaven, no God, no nations. And from our perspective, it's this whole New World Order type of song. It's promoting it. Now, I said, well, maybe it was naively written that way. Lisa says maybe it's taken out of context, or he didn't intend it that way.
I think if you look at the time that he was living in, I don't think he wrote it as a New World Order song. I think that it can be taken that way, and it could be conceivably even written from the standpoint of that which he was fighting against. Mm-hmm. I mean, a good writer has to be able to write from all sides of an issue. But I think that when he wrote it, and of course I'm just speculating, but I want to believe, I like to believe, and I think that this is correct, that he wrote it, you know, they're living in a time of everybody wanted peace and love. The hippies all wanted the world to live in unity. And I think it was written in that regard. Now, how it was taken by other people is another story.
Yeah. And, I mean, I can see it now, you know, 25 or 30 years later is, you know, why does he want a world with no God and no nations? I mean, I like nations.
I think he was expressing more his...
Well, I think he's more of an idealist myself.
Hating illusions. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I think his music was very straightforward.
But he was an idealist in that he wanted to picture this utopian type of world. And that's what, at least from his perspective at the time, I think Imagine came from. But still, I just wish he never would have written a song at all, ever.
Really? That's how much, I like that
song.
Yeah,
that's how much I don't like it. But what I do like about Lennon is that he was an activist. Now, he could have very easily been one of these pampered millionaire rock stars that lived in a mansion, or he could have been like Bob Dylan, who wrote political songs but never became
an activist.
Or he could become these celebrity activists like Sheryl Crow or whoever, that whenever there's a cause where they can get their picture or their face on TV, they quickly go over and do it. But there's no real belief to their core.
Well, they use it
core.
For a photo op to exploit an event or a cause to gain more popularity and exposure.
Yeah.
But John Lennon was the real thing. John Lennon was a political activist. In fact, the government considered him a radical, an extremist.
Yeah. He stood out as probably the most visible rock star at that time against the war. He was obviously anti-establishment. Mm-hmm. And Nixon and Hoover became obsessed in the early 70s with Lennon and his politics. J. Edgar Hoover called him, these are from the FBI files, an extremist and a very dangerous person. Mm-hmm. This FBI file was nearly 300 pages, weighed 26 pounds, and in 1972, John Lennon, he was talking to Paul Krasner, who's started one of the most famous anti-establishment magazines called The Realist, and he said, if anything happens to Yoko and me, I just want you to know that it wasn't an accident. So Lennon was very aware of how precarious his situation was.
Yeah, I guess their government surveillance of him ended in 1976. When Carter became president, he sort of reined in the intelligence agencies.
Yeah.
And so for 4 years, Lennon was off the hook, and his government dossier officially ends in 1976. And conveniently enough, when he reemerged after his five-year self-imposed seclusion, self-imposed retirement, he was murdered within a few months of emerging. And you have to think about it. He had unfettered access to the media.
Mm-hmm.
He had potentially enormous power. He could talk directly to millions of people who absolutely worshipped him. They loved him. Many millions did.
And knowing that Ronald Reagan was going to be soon in office, he'd already been elected when Lennon was shot. Here's this whole world that was going to have the Reagan illusion, and then you have John Lennon coming out of his house husband span of 4 or 5 years, and this was a guy that could have just bulletproof, just penetrate this illusion, this smokescreen, and say, wait a second, we're buying into this Ronald Reagan crap? So,
yeah.
But he really became on the radar in 1971. That was at this concert. It was called the Free John Sinclair Concert. And John Sinclair basically was the manager of a rock group called the MC5, and he was also a founder of the White Panthers. Well, this rally was held at the University of Michigan, which, by the way, has the biggest football stadium in the country. And other people that were there, this was the hardcore radicals of the time. There was Jerry Rubin, who founded the Yippies. There was Bobby Seale, who was the chairman of the Black Panthers. There was Dave Dellinger, who was the attorney for the Chicago Seven. Also, Rennie Davis, who was the organizer for the New Left. And when Lennon and Yoko appeared at 3 in the morning, there were still 15,000 people at this rally waiting for him. And that's really what sent a scare into Nixon and Hoover and these people, because they saw what he was capable of. And I'm going to follow up on this in a little bit.
Yeah, they were afraid that he was actually capable of disrupting the Republican National Convention in Miami.
That's right.
He had at least two presidents really squirming about the kind of influence that he had.
Yeah, and what Lennon actually wanted to do was start this anti-Nixon re-election campaign in 1971 and 1972, and they actually started doing some demonstrations. He wanted to get Bob Dylan to come along on this concert tour, and as Lisa said, the FBI was very worried that Lennon and his cohorts were going to disrupt the Republican National Convention in Miami in 1972, kind of like what happened to the Democratic Convention in 1968 in Chicago.
Right.
So this was the real thing.
So even though Lennon's FBI file said he was a radical extremist, that he was dangerous, one informant did tell the FBI, don't worry so much about Lennon. He's too stoned to do anything like you're thinking he might be capable of. But was he really?
Yeah, was he really? And we know that Lennon did go on his, what he calls his lost weekend, from 1974 to 1975. It was a lost weekend that lasted 2 years. And this is when he was separated from Yoko Ono, and he was living out in L.A.
Hanging out with Elton John.
Yeah, and partying with all the wild ones out there. Also, some of the other activist things he did was his bed-ins for peace.
Right.
And Yoko, where they would sit in a bed for an entire weekend in front of the media. They did this in Montreal and also in Amsterdam. They also did a thing called bagism, where they would cover their entire bodies with bags so that you couldn't get any perception of what the person was. They just wanted their voice and their message to come out. They also, being that Lennon was from England, they actually marched for the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, which didn't make the people in England real happy. And as Lisa said, he had constant battles about immigration, his drug battles. He had deportation orders set against him.
Right.
So he
was
always in trouble.
They were using the excuse that, you know, the marijuana charge to not give him his visa, but also because of his political views and his political activities. Now, toward the end of the Carter administration, Carter was pretty much considered a joke by, almost
everybody. Yeah.
And so the forces that were going to retake the government started to reclaim power over the intelligence agencies.
Yep.
And this is when you start seeing things, the dynamics start to change. And that's when Lennon started to come out of his self-imposed retirement.
That's right.
1980.
And as Lisa said, he was under constant FBI surveillance from 71 to 72. His phone was always tapped.
Until 76.
Yeah. Till 76, he participated in many, many demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
He hung out with some of the radicals that we mentioned, also Abbie Hoffman.
Right.
And when he came out in 1980, when he wrote this song or this album, Double Fantasy, in like a month or so, it just poured out of him. The government at that time, when you read the papers that were disclosed under the Freedom of Information Act, the government didn't consider Lennon this aging rock star that was just washed up and forgotten about. They still knew that he had a mouth on him, he still had his fire, and they knew this guy could start trouble for them if he wanted to. So
right. They knew that he wasn't a harmless rock and roller, that he wasn't just somebody who sat in a studio behind a mic and sang songs. This guy got out on the street.
Yeah.
And he had such a mesmerizing presence. He had such charisma. And his murder has actually been compared with Robert F. Kennedy's, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it's the same mind control, the same psychic driving, the same repetition of messages. And there's something so eerily similar, even to Lee Harvey Oswald, where this was intact. And another thing that always followed Lennon was this controversy.
Yeah.
Back even when he was with the Beatles in the mid-60s, he came out with a statement that said, you know, the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. Well, he didn't mean it that way, because I've heard the tapes on the Sunday morning show that I've been listening to for about 10 years, and he didn't mean it that way, but a lot of the Southern fundamentalists took his albums, set them on fire, broke them, radio stations refused to play the Beatles. Also, if you listen and watch the photo gallery at the end of today's show, there's a song called God that may be the most controversial song he's ever written. And if you listen to the lyrics, you'll see why. He also has a song that we're going to play, I think, Friday for the photo gallery called Working Class Hero. And he said, this is a song for the revolution. This is for the people like me who are the working class. That's what John Lennon said, because he came from very humble roots. And he always still, he had more of an affinity to the working class people than he did to the upper echelon. You know, when he, remember that concert where he says, you know, we can all just jangle our jewelry for the people in the in the the expensive seats. So,
you know, even if he was even partly an idealist, I think that he was very much, in many ways, a realist. And he refused to embrace a lot of these illusions that still are embraced by so many people today. And that's one of the things that makes his music so timeless.
And I think if John Lennon was around today, he would dig what we're doing at Wing TV, because we're giving the same message that he gave. He said you have to get out there on the streets. Here's a guy that wrote on the White Album not only one song called Revolution. It appeared twice. It was the slow version and a fast version. Here's a guy that's writing songs called Revolution. Here's a guy who is a political activist.
This guy publicly attacked the immigration department and the government. I mean, he was open about it.
Yeah.
He launched a battle, a protracted battle, to fight to be able to stay in America, and he won.
Yeah, and we kind of liken what we do and what he did is there was all the pampered rock stars that might have said things about the revolution or politics, but never came out publicly on the streets and did anything. It's the same with us. There's a lot of people out there that talk about the New World Order, but how many of them actually go out on the streets and do something about it?
We've talked many times about how much we admire Bob Dylan's songs and his songwriting. But Bob Dylan never got out there, and he never engaged directly in this activism. He wrote about it and maybe sparked a lot of it. But John Lennon, on the other hand, was really out there among the people and a front runner.
He sang about it and he went out and did it. The last thing I like about Lennon, and this goes again back to the realist, idealist, maybe to the disillusionment, is he was, more than any other rock star I can think of, he was a constant seeker. He wanted the ultimate answers in life, and so he went through the drugs, LSD, to see if that was the answer. He went over and visited the Maharishi. He went into religion, transcendental meditation, yoga, I Ching, primal scream therapy, the occult, literature. He did every avenue that was open. He went down and traveled to try to find what the ultimate truth
was. And you know what the ultimate answer for him was? Love. Love is the answer.
Yeah. If you go back and listen to the Beatles songs, and I wish he could do a computer thing on how often the word love came up in their songs, and in John's songs, and Paul McCartney's and Ringo's, love was very, very prevalent. Of course, this was a creature of the times, you know, the late 60s with Flower Power and the Summer of Love. But this is what me and Lisa were talking about last night, too, is when they were doing these bed-ins for peace, and they came up with this song, Give Peace a Chance. There's been war all through our lifetime. There's never been a time when there hasn't been war. And they're so, John and Yoko are sitting in those beds, and I'm no fan of Yoko, don't get me wrong, but they're sitting in these beds, and the medias are asking them all these different intellectual questions and ragging on them, and Lennon says, all we're saying is give peace a chance. What's so wrong about that? Why don't we try peace since war has been going on for hundreds and thousands of years? And look, it's not working, is it? Why don't we give peace a chance?
Well, the reason they don't is because there's no profit in
peace.
Right.
That's right. So anyway, check out Lisa's photo gallery here. It's very powerful. It's a very controversial song. And download the show. Try downloading it, because we're still getting a lot of people bogging out on this. So let us know what you think. Also, anybody that orders, hold that pen up again. It's beautiful. This isn't just some cheap little Bic pen. This is a nice quality pen. So anybody that orders, we're going to throw a pen in there for them. So just
these are
cool.
Awesome.
They are. They're great. So we'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you then.